You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day, getting a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, can do, must do, and will do. And hoping, too, that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it's too damn hot and you got some good air on, then go ahead, chill out. Man, it's the eastern part of this country is baking. I need to look at the weather worldwide, man, because I don't know if I haven't heard about Africa suffering, but I know Europe was going through a lot. So, wow. Anyway, this is African Perspective. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And there will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, my engineer, Brother Kwaku. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Once again, this program is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. Our story, Monday and Wednesday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. From 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., our story with Baba Wes Johnson and Brother Johnny. On Thursday, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursday, it's the Black Liberation Movement with Brother Geronimo Pratt. Excuse me. The Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba, who's with the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening at 8 p.m. with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Sunday, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday, Pinckney to Pinckney. Activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. This program, Pinckney to Pinckney, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. At 7 p.m., once again, it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yeah, family. Let's get into it. The Inyasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Quickly, this is Arthur, Baba Barudi, and unfortunately, Baba Barudi will not be with us today. We have to reschedule. Baba Barudi is, once again, is having issues health-wise, you know, but I'm going to tell you, he's a soldier for real. Literally, he's a soldier. Yeah. So not today, family, unfortunately. But soon, that's for sure. We'll have Baba Barudi on soon. July 27th. Power is the ability to define reality and to make others accept your definition as if it's their own. Nana Kwaku Burko. That's right, Baba. Wade Nobles, Dr. Wade Nobles. The idea of human evolution as a cornerstone of European science began as they began to rise out of their inherent intellectual and economic morass through robbing other people of their original thought and resources. Europeans appropriate other sciences and develop it as a rational weapon for asserting that their aggressions against those others were correct, responsible and indeed necessary for the civilizing of other people. As they moved out of the raw physical barbarism, they needed objective tools to prove that their way of organizing society, technology, work, and possessions were superior to all others. And science proved, and science provided those tools. That said, since they could not prove that any other humanity originated in Europe, they needed to overcompensate for their glaring discrepancy of by proving that their late arrival on the human scene was evident of their natural superiority. Evolutionary development, the theory did this by making the that theory that as they proposed, it made the last first and the first last. It argued that those organisms that were the strongest, most aggressive, and best adapted to their surroundings, to their environment, were the ones who had their greatest chances for survival, survival of the fittest. In proving out this scientific truth, they made their wanton aggressiveness tantamount to forward progress. Because according to European evolutionary theory, the last to arrive is best qualified to lead. And indeed, they were absolutely the last and by far the most violently aggressive of all before. Affirm, only we define the African reality, Ashe. Only we define the African reality. July 28th. When the core of a body is oppressed, destroyed, polluted, corrupted, or raped, be it biological, societal, institutional, or national, the body that envelops it is itself dead. For African people, so horribly mangled, traumatized, and fractured by others' genocidal weapons of war, healing requires that we locate the source of our pain and its progressive manifestations within us. For the toxins that bring death have infected us to the living core. Our healing requires we
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Our healing requires that we stop it both at the external source and to work backward to where the cycle, self-fulfilling origins of its internal manifestations are rooted. As oversimplified as it may sound, the means by which our healing must occur is through the study and the practice of our traditions without modifying their humanity and self-love. Health controls disease, and returning to our source removes the power of aliens to break down our spiritual, mental, and physical defensive systems, both individually and collectively. Studying and practicing our traditions gives us an informed, critical understanding of what to maintain and strengthen and what to ignore and discard, because it gives us in our historical understanding, and that's what we need, family. Our historical understanding of what has and has not worked for us over our time on this planet. Ashe. Affirm, I'm in the process of cleaning our core. Affirm, I'm in the process of cleansing our core, Ashe. The Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Once again, family, I apologize that Baba Rudy will not be our guest today. And I know I told many people, but hey, we're going to have a good show. This is a show, your show, or open mic. So whatever you want to talk about, we'll talk about a few things. I know I've seen a few things that we can have some discussion around of what's going on. I know, excuse me. I'm going to read a couple of
pieces that I like that I've seen. There's a sister. She's been coming on. I like this sister. I think, what is that? Messenger, I think. It's my messenger. Yeah. This sister here, Gwendolyn Quinn. Yeah.
Posted a video about how slave money never left.
She's going to talk about the slave money. Now, you know, we've talked about this. It's not something that is, you know, news or new or earth-shaking. I think what is problematic is that we haven't done the necessary works to challenge those who have benefited so tremendously off our captivity. And because they haven't dealt with the issue of reparations correctly either, you know. Too much stuff in the mix, you know, the ADOL stuff, you know, some people who are adamant about that we should not strive for reparations, forget about reparations. We should be happy to be here, you know. And then others who, you know, in COBRA and their struggle for reparations. And so just too many things that. The bottom line for reparations is Africans coming to grips with who we are, internalizing and purging ourselves of all the ignorance and all the foolishness. All this, you know, I think, and to begin to speak with one voice as it relates to reparations. But I think the real key is our functional unity. If all those who are outside of those who don't want to be African, fine. Kick their ass to the curb. And they can say all the hell they want. But the fact of the matter is, and once again, family, I'm not speaking of America paying reparations. I'm speaking of Europeans, of which America is. They are. So I'm speaking of all those Europeans who came out and took people's land and destroyed them, who took what is now called Australia, what is now called New Zealand, you know, who took this hemisphere, what is now called South America, North America. I'm talking about that. I'm talking about that. Now, when Japan pulled that move in World War II, and try to take over the Southeast Asia and eventually a bomb was dropped on their ass, two of them in fact, in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, devastating those two cities. Now, of course, you can, you know, online you can go do all kind of shit, but you can go look at those two cities then, after the bomb was dropped, and today, how they look. And they look better than many, many of the cities, you know, especially cities that in the Midwest, like Detroit, you know. I know Detroit's making a comeback, but my point is not about these American cities. My point is that because Japan did so well after the bomb was dropped on their ass that they got their people together and through education of themselves went about saying, we're going to retool. I always like this story. I always like the story of Edward Demings. And if you don't know who Edward Demings is, then go ahead and look him up. But he had a model. He had a model for society and progress. He tried to hip America, but America's model was not. No, we don't want like a socialist kind of model, man. We don't want that. We, you know, we like where there's a top person who makes just stupid money. Then there's a middle, then there's a, some other officers, and then there's a middle management. And then, of course, the people who really make it happen are all those laborers at the bottom. That's the model that this society likes. It creates oligarchs. It's an oligarchy. It creates that some people have so much money. It's, man. And so Japan didn't do that. They embraced Edward Deming's model that they was presented to them. And they ran with it, and they began to develop. Now, of course, right after that war, right after those bombs were dropped, you know, if you're as old as I am, then you remember back when you were a kid, stuff made in Japan was somewhat so-called inferior. And for us, because it was cheap, out of those things we bought. You know, little wind-up toys and stuff like that. So made in Japan. But as they continued to develop, the Japanese became very strong economically, and they became strong technologically. In fact, I will never forget about 20-some years ago, like a trivia question, how many VCRs are made in America. What is zero? What is zero? Look at all the television, all the U.S. television, Zenith, Magnavox, all the, knocked out the box with Koreans and Chinese and Japanese televisions. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the top television is Samsung out of Korea. The first one to get notoriety was Sony, a Sony of your own, Sony Trinitron. But because of that family, and because of the devastation of the war and what was dropped on him, and the internment of Japanese who were born in America, who were U.S. citizens. Now, you know, they didn't do that to the Germans. They didn't put the Germans in concentration camps. And how the Germans were treated. They were treated so much better. Germans, prisoners of war were treated better than us. Because they're white. They're just like the Confederates and the and the Union. They're still white folks. That's why after the war, you've seen what happened. They gave the shit back to them. And so the Japanese were awarded reparations. The Japanese here locally, here in this country, were given reparations. The Japanese in Japan were given a so-called Marshall Plan, you know, for them to build. But I don't say these things as if, well, what about us? The reality of it is, these crackers would wish there ain't no us. But we don't die. We multiply. Now, I know we don't do it too much here in the state. You know, hell, we've been 13, 14, 15% at the most for many years. Our population is stagnant. One die, one is born. One die, one is born. But their population, they've been experiencing negative population growth for decades. Every two, three die, only one is born. And it's the same thing in Europe. No. No. The last shall be first. No. Mm-mm. The first shall always be first. So no, that didn't happen. So here's a number of Americans who have benefited from the enslavement of African people continuously over that period of time. You know? Yeah. It's a sister, and I don't know if you see her in your, you know, messenger or Instagram or so forth. Man, I love her commentary. Good sister. Here she is, Sister Quinlan, talking about the captivity, talking about the those who have benefited from to this very day. The fact that once it was over, the foundation that they had built was able to be sustained, and the growth that they happened still after that, because they had a foundation built on our backs. Check it out.
I posted a video about how slave money never left, and a lot of y'all were asking, well, who's still benefiting? Okay, so let's start with this. A whole lineup of people that are running this country are living off of wealth built on slavery. Not metaphorically, not spiritually. I'm talking actual descendants of enslavers writing laws, cutting checks, and holding office. And we're gonna name them. Some of them, anyway. So let's get into it. In 2023, Reuters dropped a study identifying more than 100 current U.S. leaders in Congress and governor's mansions on the Supreme Court who can trace their families back to slaveholders. And guess what? Those families, they never gave back a cent, never paid restitution, never lost land. They just passed the money and the power. So let's name names. Y'all are not going to like me for this. Gosh. President Joe Biden. His mother's side goes back to enslavers. Supreme Court Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Neil Gorsuch. Yeah, they descended from enslavers too. Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Tom Cotton, Nancy Mace, James Lankford. All senators, all tied to slavery through family. Even Michigan's Gary Peters and Debbie Stabenow have that lineage. But you don't see them addressing it, do you? And before you ask, no, Trump is not on this list. His people got here after slavery ended. But don't get it twisted, he is still knee-deep in white supremacy. Asa Hutchinson and Doug Burgum, both 2024 GOP presidential candidates, also have documented enslaver ancestors. Do you think they're passing policies without that legacy baked in? And here's the real kicker. A PLOS ONE study showed that lawmakers whose families enslaved 16 or more people have a median net worth of nearly $4 million higher than their colleagues who don't have that lineage. Even when you adjust for age, education, and race, that's not a coincidence, that's inheritance. That's power passed down while Black folks were handed nothing but freedom in a world that was rigged against them. Professor Henry Louis Gates said it best. We do not inherit guilt for our ancestors' actions, but we do inherit the legacies. So ask yourself, why do we keep pretending that the past is the past? When it's sitting in the Senate, the Supreme Court, and the governor's mansions, their family names are still on bank accounts, endowments, and legislation. And most of them haven't said a word. This isn't about blame, it's about truth. Because if we don't name the power, we can't challenge the system that protects it.
Ashe. Yeah, I say. That's why my piece in terms of reparations is global.
Hey, Ochi.
Yo, hey, Jay, how you doing?
Sorry about cutting in. Is Baroudi coming on?
No, he's not, man. We talked last night. He's not doing good health-wise for the moment. He has some serious.
Okay. I'll catch up with you later. Let me run.
All right, brother.
All right.
Peace.
I'll call in later.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, see, everybody's abandoned me. I had five calls. Okay. But I'm talking about globally that Africans and American Africans and all other Africans in the diaspora, we are going after this reparations for what Europeans have done to us. And we're going to be strong about it because why? We're going to be developing the continent. We got resources. They want resources? Oh, really? You want resources? Yeah. Well, you know, pay what you owe. Pay what you owe. Look what you have done to us. Look, I can definitely point to all the ignorance. I can definitely point to all of those who are, would love to be white. Would love to be white. I played a piece about this Caucasian who is very racist, but his family lineage goes back to this one brother who would be his great grandfather, would be his great grandfather, you know. Yeah. So, you know, yeah. So I'm going to read a piece that, you know, I've Stacy Patton, Dr. Stacy Patton is just on. So I'm going to play this piece, read this piece by Dr. Stacy Patton in the, Substack. So I hope that you're getting Substack, you know, brothers and sisters. I hope that you are getting Substack. Go to Substack.com and put yourself in there. Just excellent contributors. Independent. And excellent contributors. This is deep, fam. This is deep. This is from yesterday, July 27th, at Substack. This is Dr. Stacy Patton. Booty to brimstone. Donald Trump, Satan, and the animated micropeen that broke the internet. The creators of South Park didn't just humiliate Trump. It exposed the fall of empire, the myth of dominance, and what happens when idolatry gets animated. I didn't see it, but I love it. But they have a picture of it with Trump in bed with Satan. You know, him looking, smiling with Satan. A little mega hat next to the nightstand. Mm-hmm. Substack is reader-supported. To receive new posts and support my work, consider becoming a free or paid subscriber to Substack. Go to Substack. Update. Here we go, family. Church, good morning. Welcome to another Sunday service. Now, last week, the Spirit led me to preach on Donald Trump's legs. Them heavy, overburdened, puffy, circulation-denying legs. Legs so swollen with sin, they needed their own area code. I told y'all them legs tell a story of corruption, a story of weight that ain't just physical, but spiritual. And we prayed that the good Lord might let the truth circulate again. But this week, saints, this week, the Lord spoke to me and said, rise up, but not in glory, not in righteousness, not in purpose. The Lord said, Reverend Dr. Stacy Pants, that's what she's calling herself in this article, Reverend Dr. Stacy Pants, go higher, higher to the regions of deception, higher to the seat of swagger, higher to the pulpit of the pelvis where false power preaches from beneath a red tie and a bloated gut. Someone say, preach, preach. See, the white American imagination is so fragile, so desperate for a savior, that it anointed a man with no discipline, no scripture, no soul, and gave him the nuclear codes. But the Lord said, I will expose what is hidden. I will shrink what has been inflated. I will turn your idol into a punchline. Luke chapter 8, verse 17 says, for nothing is hidden that will not be made manifest, nor is anything secret that will not
be known and come to light. And in Deuteronomy 28:17, it says, you shall become a horror, a proverb, and a byword among all the people where the Lord will lead you. And so this week, the word comes to us not through thunder or fire, but through a whisper, a very small, delicate, nearly incomprehensible whisper. And the message is clear. Behold, the penis is tiny, but the delusion is supersized. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Y'all don't want to hear me preach on this moment. Mm-hmm. I got to preach, y'all. This morning, I am bringing you the gospel according to South Park, chapter 27. The cartoon peeled back the fig leaf and said, y'all need to come see this. And what do we see, church? Not the strong man, not the alpha man, not the divine masculine and glory man, but a sad little weenie with eyes and a voiceover. Now listen, this ain't about body shaming. It's about truth, because some of y'all been worshiping at the altar of delusion for so long. You forgot what honesty feels like. You forgot what real manhood looks like. Y'all thought being loud, rude, racist, and rich was masculinity. You thought threatening judges and sexually assaulting women was dominant. You thought waving a Bible upside down made you righteous. But let me remind you, Goliath was big too. That ain't stopped from getting rocked by the truth. That didn't stop him from getting rocked by the truth. That's right. Amen. And now, in the year of our Lord, 2025, God said, I will not be mocked. So God sent Trey Parker and Matt Stone to do what no network news anchor, no Republican senator, no New York Times op-ed ever had the guts to do. They undressed that man, literally stripped him down in the desert, turned his baby carrot into a cartoon character, and made it say, his penis is teeny tiny, but his love for us is large. The devil is a lie, because we know love by its actions, not its appendages. And as if that wasn't enough, they had him laid up in bed with the devil to brimstone, cuddled under the covers with Lucifer like it was the date night at the saint at the end times. Satan looked at Trump and said, I don't usually do this, but you different. Woo! Children of the Lord. Listen, we are witnessing is the weaponization of whiteness, the illusion of empire, the fall of false gods, and what happens when a man builds his kingdom on lies and limp masculinity. Somebody say limp and amen. And now that the cartoon is out, weenie is out in public, Trump's threatening is mad. Look at all the alpha male energy mad about animated penis being too accurate. Now, saints, I know some of y'all are sitting in the sanctuary clutching your pearls and the church fans. I hear y'all whispering, but Reverend Dr. Stacy Pants, is it holy to preach about a dick? And I say, yes. Yes, it is. If the Lord saw fit to put it in Ezekiel, if the ancients could write about a donkey-sized penis and say, thus saith the Lord, then who are we to turn away from the revelation? Turn to Ezekiel 23:20. The scripture makes it plain. She lusted after her lovers, whose members were like those of donkeys and those whose emissions were
like those of stallions. And now that can the biblical canon, surely can we talk about a cartoon pecker? Amen. Amen. If David could dance naked before the Lord, if circumcision could be a covenant, if God could harden Pharaoh's heart and still talk about foreskins, then surely we can talk about a cartoon weenie with googly eyes. This ain't profanity. It's prophecy. This ain't smut. It's sacred sacrifice. This is the Holy Ghost of petty working through cable television and animated blasphemy to remind America you cannot build an empire on lies and not expect to be dragged. Because this ain't about anatomy, saints. It's about idolatry. Donald Trump's body has been the temple of American projection. Big towers, big stakes, big planes, big lies, big walls, big bigotry. He even once said his nuclear button was bigger than Kim Jong-un's. I'm quite sure he said that shit. My nuclear button is bigger than yours. Church, he turned the presidency into a penis measuring contest. And now we see he lost that one too. See, the thing about empires, it always wants to look invincible. It thrives on scale, spectacle, and overcompensation. That's why Pharaoh wore gold. That's why Caesar rode in on chariots. And ain't it funny, saints, that the man who once called Stormy Daniels horse face and bragged about his grabbing women by the has now become a literal dick joke on basic cable. I gotta go to YouTube and go to South Park. I gotta see that episode, man, for myself. Won't the Lord humble you? Won't the Lord take your blasphemies and turn them into a billboard satire? Won't the Lord make the last first and the tiny go veil? Because this right here, this South Park episode, is more than satire. It's scriptural fulfillment. It's what happens when the God of whiteness and patriarchy is laid bare and turns out to be just a man, a small man with a very tiny scepter. And Lord have mercy. His followers are mad. They big mad. They didn't get mad when he mocked the disabled. They didn't get mad when he called for violence. They didn't get mad when he bragged about assaulting women. When he took immigrant children and locked them in cages. No. They were fine with all of that. But draw a tiny penis? How dare you attack our king? Let me say this plain. A nation that can stomach genocide but gags at a dick joke ain't morally upright, is spiritually constipated. That's why Isaiah 2:17 had to remind us. The arrogance of man will be brought low and the pride of man humbled. The Lord alone will be exalted. And isn't it that what we're seeing, church? A bloated, blustering man, crusted not by war, not by an enemy army, but by the soft whimper of cartoon phallus, with a googly eye and a script. A whimpering of a cartoon phallus. Won't he do it? Won't the Most High use foolish things to confound the mighty? Because if Trump's whole empire can be deflated by a dick drawing, what does that tell you? That the emperor's clothes weren't just missing. He never had any balls to begin with. Yeah. Turn to your neighbor and say, no balls. Turn to your neighbor. Oh, yes, saints. I'll admit, close out. I'm going to close out this sermon in the key of truth and trembling masculinity. This morning, we cracked open Ezekiel. We circled back to Isaiah. We heard from Matthew. And we watched as South Park lifted the veil and said, this is the man y'all bow down to? So what's the takeaway, saints? It's not that Trump has a tiny penis or a little dick. It's that America has a tiny conscience. They have a tiny conscience. That whiteness has a tiny moral compass. That patriarchy has a tiny tolerance for truth. And now let us know and let us bow our heads for the benediction. May the Lord bless you and keep you from the false messiahs with fake tans and fragile egos. May the Lord deliver you from men who mistake volume for virtue and lawsuits for leadership. May the Lord protect you from spirit, from golden calves, mega prophets, and narcissism. May the Lord give you the strength to laugh at evil, to mock the mighty, and to see the ridiculous for what it truly is, a mirror held up to empire, cracked and tiny. Oh, holy and righteous. Oh, holy and righteous one. You who humbled Pharaoh and flipped Caesar's table. You who rise in not on a spectacle, but on the truth. We thank you today for the ministry on the micro phallus. We thank you for cartoons that carry more gospel than congressional hearings. We thank you for every cracked image, false, every false God exposed, every idol torn down by laughter and light. Let the people not be deceived by suits or steeples, by slogans or subpoenas. Let them know that your power didn't need pageantry. It just needs truth, O Lord. So strip every lie down to its naked shame. Shrink every false king to his proper size. And remind your people, it is better to have a small member and a mighty heart than a big mouth and no soul. I say. In the name of Black Jesus, Beyonce at Coach Chilla, and Harriet with the shotgun. Now let the church say amen and amen. That's right, my brothers and sisters. You can go online and go to Substack. And you can get Stacy, and also to Brother Khalil Green. He has some good commentary. There's some Caucasians on there, too, that have some good commentary. These are all people who are speaking on a platform that is more safe. And I know that one day we will, too. So, yeah. What do you think, family? Give us a call. The phone lines are open at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. The phone lines are open. Yeah. Man. That's how it goes. Right? That's how it goes. Yeah, we're going to take a break here in a minute. When we come back from the break, give us a call and give us your perspective, your African perspective on the issues of our day. You know, it's a lot of things that are happening. And believe me, we're living in some really interesting times. And I think what I try to do, family, and hope you understand what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to get you to think outside of this bullshit. I'm trying to get you to be or to have at your core your Africanness. Now, I know there's so much distractions. I mean, there's a constant talking about we are not African. We're not African. No, brothers and sisters, we're African. We are Africans. We're not indigenous. We come from out of Africa. We come from out of Africa into other parts of the world. And what makes us different is our ability to adapt to environments. What makes human beings different is the ability to adapt to environments. Now, you may say, people that talk about evolution, the evolution is not real, you know. And so I know at one time the Caucasian did not want evolution to be real, you know, because he wanted to stake supremacy. And then he used it, of course, to do that. And just as I read to you in Inyasasim and others, that he's the last of the human evolution of human beings. He's the last. He mutated. He had to mutate to adapt to the environment that he was in. In fact, that the environment changed, I mean, harsh, drastic. And to meet that, and to continue to live, he mutated. He became Neanderthal. Many humans on the planet have some amount of Neanderthal, particularly Europeans, but Africans do not, because we are the first humans. We're the first humans on the planet. And the Neanderthal in their history, why would that make the Caucasians think? Because human beings, you know, they look at something and they say, yeah, okay, I can see that, I can do that. And then they think, maybe I can improve on this. Just like the, you know, the Japanese, when they got that bomb dropped on them, they were allowed to come here to look at aerospace, train making, all these other things. And, of course, they took all that back. They had their little cameras. So sorry, excuse please, thank you. Take all that back. And look at the modernization of the island of Japan. The trains. The electronics. Look at it. But it's the European who wants people to believe that he is superior. Yeah. We're gonna be right back. You can join the conversation, of course, or let us know what's on your mind. It's an open mic piece. And so we're going to be right back. And you stay with us. Okay. You're listening to the African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media,
part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Donald Byrd and the Blackbirds. DC flight time. We need to take off and get up out of here. Let me get a call in. We got good afternoon, Brother Lus. How you doing?
Good afternoon, Baboji. How you feeling today?
I'm well today. I'm well, brother. What about you, man?
Same old 76 here, trying to stay perpendicular and cool.
Sure. Definitely. Definitely.
I had an opportunity this weekend to do some perusing on the internet. And I came across a piece by Robin Walker regarding the Journey of the Drum, a historian out of the UK, and hopefully Paul will call in. And, you know, it's just interesting the work that's being done over there. I had never heard of Robin Walker before, but now I'm like, hey, this is a very interesting brother.
Yeah, he is. Dark-skinned brother, good brother. He speaks with that accent too, of course, and talks about our history.
Yeah, which is also interesting because I didn't know he was a musician, right?
Oh.
And during that piece, he showed a picture of himself playing alto sax, right?
Oh, okay.
And so the group that he was working with, I understand that from what I thought I may have seen, worked with Courtney Pine. Courtney Pine is one of the saxophonist that I've become familiar with as well. So,
okay.
Interesting how people you run across, you just never know the 6 degrees of separation of sorts.
Mm-hmm,
So, just trying to stay educated in this process of learning who I am.
Right.
Just thought I'd chime in as always. And listen and learn more as we go through.
Yeah. Right on, my brother. Appreciate you. Thanks a lot,
peace
brother.
And blessings.
Peace, brother.
All right.
Ashe. I love that brother, man. Brother Ted Lusk, man. I decided, so that me rambling, you know, and since we don't have Baba Baruti here, we'll read Baba Baruti's words. I often go to the identity. Identity, the exili, the culture, society, and person. Frontline concepts in African-centered sociology. We're going to read cultural genocide. And, of course, we know what genocide is. Of course, we know what the word side is. Side means to die. Homicide, suicide, fratricide, genocide. To die. The desert takes. The desert knows no giving. It is not the nature of the desert to return anything but destruction. Spring water flowing to the desert. Your future is extinction. Aikwe Arman. Cultural genocide, what we call cultural side, from here on out, is the process of killing a culture through shredding the material and non-material traditions through which it is transferred from one generation to the next. Cultural genocide, cultural side fully disconnects a culture's people from any sense of meaningful interaction or affinity with it. In fact, when successful, it turns its people completely away from and even against it. And that's what you see, family. That's what you see. That's why you are more apt to fight for this shit than you are for who we are culturally, who we are historically. You're willing to try your best to stay on this damn stinky, rotten-ass ship because you have experienced culture side. You hate who you are and all that are like you.
you embraced the American African culture, which is, you know, black. Yeah, black. Negroid. Which you don't want to be. Through often masked behind intense denial and self-abrasive rationalization, it brings immeasurable pain to a people. It is a wicked, ungodly, unforgiving thing to do to any people, no matter their nature or condition. That's right. To turn themselves from who they are, to make them alienated from who they are. Yet it is what those without affection, emotion, conscious, or divinely connected melanin have been committed against us for the last four millennia. And they continue this unprovoked cultural side because they know that in order for them to succeed in their crusade for global domination, we, of all people, must be culturally eradicated. For we are the first, the original genius that made all that is knowledgeable and knowing of nature, universal order, to ourselves and the world. And in virtually every way imaginable, we are their opposites. Cultural side follows the evolutionary dictates of Eurocentric political science. It follows a scientifically sanctioned and applied ideology of supremacy that is compelled to define the last as best in order for them to be of worth and most right. Accordingly, we must be led and then lead ourselves to forget about the trauma and the memory and the pain inflicted by this heinous subhuman act we have reconceptualized as the Ma'afa. No matter what we do to ourselves or each other as a result of it, we must remember that cultural side is something done by others against us. Let me say that again. Cultural side is something done by others against us. It is a process initiated, enhanced, and continuously reinforced by others. It is a natural, unsuppressed outcome of the Ma'afa. Its initial, most destructive stages corrupt and nullify a people's culturally correct social institutions, disconnecting them from their essence and leaving them without a credible, natural source of energy, truth, and inspiration. They evolve. These evolve to take on a more sophisticated life of their own in the minds of the people who willingly, through unwittingly, become caught up in the rapture of their own destruction. The goal, of course, is to remove people with a decent working African memory from the Western social cultural landscape. We repeat, this definition in no way implies that this greatest of human atrocities is anywhere near completion. No, it's an ongoing process, millennium after millennium. No assault against African people in this growing insanity can ever be finally until we are no more. I repeat, no assault against African people in this growing insanity can ever be final until we are no more. Knowing this, we can never succumb to fleeting thoughts of surrender or resignation. Those who know who we are the culmination of the power of African people. We must know and always act on our historical fact that one of its finest qualities is resilience. It is a cultural characteristic proven time and countless times again. So to speak of the Ma'afa is not defeatist or being stuck in the past. No. Our recognition of the extent of the damage successfully committed against us, our nation, is meant to prove the broadcast picture of the assault and give a clearer understanding of what happened and is happening so that the centered Africans will understand the magnitude of what we have committed ourselves to reverse. In the process, it teaches us the traditions and sanity to which we must fully return if we are to again claim an African sanity. If we are too weak to stomach the intent and effects of our sworn enemy, how can we ever expect to stop and reverse them? If we are too weak to stomach the intent and the effects of our sworn enemy, how can we ever expect to stop and reverse them? Deculturalization is an aspect, an outcome of cultural side. It's the process whereby people, number one, are taken out of their cultural environments. Number two, are placed in an alienated one that is counter against their own. Number three, are forced to adapt and internalize as their own this alien cultural beliefs, values, technology, methodologies, imperatives, and aspirations. Number four, come to accept this divisively formed personality as their own and fully reject everything of meaning which they ascend from, and therefore their essence and self. Deculturalization's first three stages are the outcome of external enemy forces. The last two are orchestrated by effects engendered and generated within this false consciousness, created within the victims through a dysfunctional, self-destructive, disempowering socialization. This false consciousness naturally manifests itself in wherever noose institutions and communities these people create for themselves within the bounds of negative, limiting definitions given them of themselves by their oppressors. In no social transformation are the stages mutually exclusive or without meaningful connection. They too are epigenetic. Within the five stages of deculturalization presented here, the stage at which a people is most dramatically and effectively transformed into something other than themselves is the third stage. And the third stage is, are forced to adapt and internalize as their own this alien culture's beliefs, its values, its technological methodology, imperatives, and aspirations. Within the five stages, the deculturalization presented here, the stage at which a people is most dramatically and effectively transformed into something other than themselves is the third stage. It is during this period when they have been separated from their source long enough to begin to confuse an alien space, people, and standard with their home, hope, and vision. So you associate this madness. This is my home. This is my hope. This is my vision. Here, menticide finds a welcome home. Menticide. Killing your mind. Often through, there are even more horrific results for the human psyche of the vanquished than simple self-confusion. Often they find that the torture given by their undeniable mirror images, the hateful force with which they are slammed against themselves by those who work toward their self-negation and the disarming of and deception of the occupying culture's universalizing theories, cause them to seek escape into a delusion that will carry them toward the denial of any cultural direction. Within our community, these special individuals totally refuse to accept the possibility that they are thinking and acting within the social context of any culture at all. Next to actually committing suicide, this is the worst stage of deculturalization because it allows deeply self-hating Africans to believe that there is truly no such thing as culture. For them, culture actually comes to be defined as whimsical, okay, idiosyncratic, without logic, lasting basis or purpose. Worst of all, when not seen as of a European origin, it is seen as regressive and harmful to self-expression and identity. Let me say that again. Worst of all, when not seen as European origin, because that's what you want to believe, that's what you hope, it is seen as regressive and harmful to self-expression and identity. It's antiquated, it's archaic. Having been caught in the deadly avalanche of racist hatred created by the icicle mines forged within the unforgiving caves of the Earth's last massive glacier, such individuals have become rootless. They have rejected the unequivocal significance of culture to their very existence, all the while held captive to horribly anti-African cultural beliefs and practices. Man, that is our situation. That is our situation, family. And yet, we beg, because you've been trained. Let me say this, and I've said it many times. What we experience, what we do, is directed. It's not happenstance. It is directed. All the foolishness, all the stuff that you see out there in the society, all the fact that we hate ourselves to such as we hate our women, we hate our men, we hate our children. All of this self-hatred has been done by design. The fear of the European, the fear of the Caucasian, the fear of Yorugu is African unity, African family. In this society, less than 30% of men and women are married to each other. African men, African women are married to each other and have African offspring that are raised by African men and women in this society and in this world. So they know who they are. They know who their enemies are. They know how to function within a society. They know what to do for themselves. And we don't understand what is happening. We don't understand what's happening to us. We don't understand the effects on our minds and how we look at ourselves, and even more deeper, how we look at each other with disdain and disgust. We have a lot of work to do. But yet, unfortunately, many of us, you know, don't take this situation serious. And yet, when you look at us and how, in spite of all the obstacles, in spite of all the hatred of others. In fact, the European has done a damn good job of influencing the world that everybody hates us. That even though our melanated skin was something that was admired and respected, it's now is something that would be scorned. Dismissed globally. There are many countries that have melanated people. What is their condition within that society? Exactly. At the bottom. At the bottom. Discrimination against melanated people is systemic. At the bottom. The amount of the amount of things that we could do with our unity to create this madness is just tremendous. That they see African men and women, families. They see Africans at the helm. They see Africans leading in various industries and various parts of society. Not just Africans when they watch the Olympics as we run over every damn body or dunk on every damn body. No, not just that. But they see Africans leading. And even, I mean, there's still so many examples of us in this society having overcome, and even though we were in terrible and deplorable conditions, but overcome those things to create. There's so many things that we've done and continue to do. Only thing that we haven't truly, truly put the serious energy into doing is unifying. Is unifying. Is drop kick all the shackles that these sons of bitches have tried to put on us. And in spite of all that, love ourselves. And love each other. Willing to work with one another. Share with one another. Support one another. Here, it is most difficult to do because here, like those of brothers and sisters in Europe, you're in the belly of the beast. So here, there is achievement. There's, you know, brothers have done some things, you know. But here is the belly of the beast. So we can't do it to the extent that we could do it in other places, and particularly on the continent, where we must do it. There is no doubt about it that what is happening on the continent must be brought into a perspective that, yes, you're in Tanzania. Yes, you're in, South Africa. You're in Ethiopia. You're in Djibouti. Wherever the hell you are on the continent, the whole purpose is to have unity, functional unity. The whole purpose is for us to come together on that, to control our land, to control our resources. Once again, I'm saying, when countries that the United States and West and Europe have affected adversely, when those countries got it together, particularly when I made an example, was Japan, while they got reparations for those who were interned here on the West Coast and so forth, and got assistance through a Marshall Plan and what Edward Demings brought to them to facilitate their rise. You can't mess with Japan. It's auto industry, it's technology, it's, man, you can't mess with Japan. Life expectancy. Now, one could argue we can't do it here because, you know, Japan is homogeneous, just one people. And here it's multi. Well, you could do it here, but you have to understand you have racism here. You have hatred here. You have jealousy, envy here. And throughout other parts where Caucasians are, because they had it amongst themselves. You ever heard me say, you know, that when the Africans, when Islam spread across North Africa, and then the Africans who accepted Islam moved into the Iberian Peninsula, you know, the Moors, and from 711 to 1492 were dominating in Europe. They were the light, literally. They created street lights. No kidding. You know, bathhouses. Told them crackers, get your damn animals out your house and put them in a corral. Bathe. So they finally kicked the Moors and the Sephardic Jews out of Spain, Portugal, so forth. And Martel and Charlemagne. I don't know why that brother calls himself Charlemagne the God. I would reject any reference to Caucasians, any name, you know, any name. But I mean, that's me. I'm not saying that, I mean, you know, if that's what you want to call yourself, then that's cool with you. You know, like, when I was involved in organizing a chapter, which later had to become a chapter of 100 black men, because the West Coast chapter, you know, and I know Tommy Dortch, he's passed, I believe, and he was here in Atlanta, and he was the president of the 100 black men, but they sent us a cease and desist letter, and it was signed by this cat named Cecil Rhodes. I mean, like, damn. His name is Cecil Rhodes? Man, and number one, I'd be all over my mama and daddy's ass naming me Cecil Rhodes. She. Do you know who Cecil Rhodes is? As soon as I had a chance to change it, man. I mean, just like when for me, because I embraced being African and sincerely embraced that, I told my mama, I said, Mama, I'm going to change my name. She said, well, go ahead, because you're going to do it anyway. Well, maybe so. But, you know, I asked for permission. In fact, you know, it is easier to beg for forgiveness than to ask for permission. Yes. You know. And so I changed my name. The fact is, I even said it then. It's not about a name change. It's about a mind. There are many people with beautiful names, African names, Muslim names, Arabic names, even European, but they do heinous and crazy stuff. So it's not about a name, it's about the mind. And so, yeah. So once we get it together like that, the same way that the Japanese did, the fact that indigenous people fought hard because they were decimated. Those nations were decimated. The Trail of Tears, of which we were marched with, coming out of Florida and the Southeast and marched all the way to Oklahoma. And then when they seeked, when the government was willing to compensate them, but nothing for us. Nothing for the African people that marched with them on the Trail of Tears. In fact, they put a stipulation, you got to be some percentage of Cherokee or Dakota, whatever the hell was. Nothing for us. Yeah. So, you know, we're understand who we are, family. We're the first humans. We were sympathetic and empathetic to all other human beings. Obviously, tremendously to a great fault. You know, that's why every time I see a picture or something article about those Africans in the Indian Ocean who, you know, if your ass go on that island, they don't kill you. They want to remain untouched. I'm not sure if that's still that way, but you know, they reject all that come at them. We got a number of you in the queue. Hit star twice. Hit star twice and give us your African perspective on this beautiful Monday. Hit star twice for those who want to, you know, talk in. Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning, Marcus.
Yes, brother.
Oh. Yes, hold on, Jay.
Oh.
Hold on.
Yes, brother. Yes. Greetings. Yeah. I'm greeting to Jay up in New York there. You know, you said something there that was interesting about the Moors. You know, when they came into Spain, 711 to 1492. And, you know, the funny thing, you know, the ironic thing is, if you look at the destruction that these people have caused since they came out of Europe in 1492, look at the amount of destruction they have caused on the planet. Yes. Look what we're going yes. through on the planet now.
Yes.
Now they're talking about, oh, we're going to go to Mars. You know, these people are sick, you know. There's something wrong with these yeah. people, you know.
Yeah,
something
they are.
Sick, I'm telling you, sick. You know, and our people still imitating them. Mm-hmm. Look at the destruction. I'm here in Memphis, Tennessee, my brother. And it's almost 200 degrees down here.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, consistently. You see what's going on all across the globe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just some sick people, man.
You know,
maybe we should have kept them over there in the cave. Should have just, you know, every time we come and see of these people, they come back around and yeah. repeat us with destruction. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I yield the floor. I listen
well,
to my
you.
Brother Jay. Keep on keeping on, my brother.
You too, Brother Marcus. I appreciate you, man. Have a blessed day. All right. Peace. Jay, what's up, Jay?
Hey, what's up, OC? Hey, Marcus, what's happening, man? I hope that heat where you at ain't doing you too dirty, man.
Yeah, but it's in Memphis, you know, man. You're in Memphis, so you know. It's stifling.
Yeah, you know, these crackers don't believe in global warming or anything of that nature. It seems like they doing everything in their power to make the planet more hotter and worse. It's
yeah.
It's just madness, man. You know the whole situation that you were speaking about earlier about Africa having to write to their own self-determination, the control of their resources, and all of that is the most important thing moving forward. And luckily,
yes,
a lot of these black leaders today are understanding that. You know what's going on in Burkina Faso. I just saw something on Instagram. They talking about the United States are going to put sanctions on Burkina Faso. Who gives a F?
Uh-huh.
I mean, what could you really do to hurt that country in the way that it's moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Burkina Faso need to put sanctions on America. What gives America the right to think that their sanctions at this stage of the game, with alliances being made with African countries, with Russia and China, mm-hmm. that these African countries give a fuck about what America does? You know what I mean? Their only concern is, are they going to come in there and put some sort of war on them?
Right.
If they're going to do that type of nonsense. But other than talking about mm-hmm. not selling them goods and not giving them goods, I don't think Burkina Faso at this time cares anything about that because of the way that they're using the resources of the land to build the land and develop the land and do the thing that they're doing. They don't give a damn about America.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What is America offering African nations, in all honesty? They're not offering them nothing. I mean, to show you the type of sick, psychopathic bastards that they are, here it is. They have food to feed.
Yeah.
Babies yeah. and things of that nature,
yeah, and they
burn it.
Right.
What kind of dog? What kind of dog are you to allow what's going on in Gaza, and then when a little bit of something gets passed through, you want the Gazan people to praise you? America is a sick fucking country,
yeah.
B.
It's a wasted,
inhumane country. You know the thing that I'm enjoying, and maybe these sick, crazy Negroes will realize it and maybe do the same thing, is these white folks in Arkansas building white-only towns.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. That's what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only difference is we just have to worry about how to defend it.
It is.
The crackers ain't worrying about how they defended it. They worrying about how to keep a goddamn Jew out of it. That's all they worry about. Think about it. Think about the logic. The logic. They not worried about anything else but keeping a Jew out of it. And believe me, if a Jew want to get in there, they get in there. Because, you know, a Jew would change his name in a minute,
yeah, well,
and sit right
the
in.
The word Jew is Caucasian. The Jew of today is Caucasian, okay? That's just like Nasser, who was president of Kemet. No, actually, president of Egypt. That's really appropriate. This is president of Egypt. He said, who are these people? When they left, they was black, and they came back white, you know? So who are these people? The European Jew, of course, it is outside. The Ashkenazis are outside. They're not genetically. That's why they told those people, don't take a damn DNA test. Because
the Jew is a chameleon, OG. Mm-hmm. He changes whenever it's necessary to fulfill whatever he needs to fulfill.
Right.
So if these white folks saying we don't want nothing but pure white folks, mm-hmm. and the Jews decide they want to be a part of it, they'll make the necessary changes to fit right in and to get right in.
Right.
But I just enjoy the whole concept of these crackers making that kind of statement, because the reality is, under this climate in this country, they're going to be able to move to other states and basically do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what comes into play is, will people of color wake up and see? And you know, I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard somebody say that the population of the Negro in America is dwindling.
Well, it's stagnant.
I don't know if it's true or not.
Right, no.
Because I haven't totally looked into it. But I know in certain places, in certain cities,
mm-hmm.
the numbers of blacks are dwindling.
That's because...
And I always ask the question, where the hell are they going?
Right. Well, there are some places that they're leaving from, and where they're going, I don't know. But the bottom line is, no, it's stagnant. Our numbers aren't dwindling. They're just stagnant. You know, we've been 13, 14, 15% of this population for a few decades. And because of our population is young, it should be growing. You know, we should be 13, 14 from 2 decades ago to 16, 17, 18, 20. You know, and some argue that it may be that, because where we get the numbers from, of course, is from the Europeans. We don't have, unless we'd had an independent group of brothers and sisters who would do the analysis and who would do the chronicling the information, that might show something different. You know, but
let me tell you this. I don't know of anybody in my family that's of the younger generation having babies. That right there says a lot. Now, I don't have a big family, but I would say I got around 6 or 7 young people under the age of 30 in my family, ain't none of them that I know of having babies that I done heard.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
You know?
Yeah.
That shows a lot. Out of that group, barely any of them, I think maybe out of 10, maybe three have significant jobs with one, and only two, I would say, have probably career jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, man, they just trying to survive to you know what you call them. Yeah. But then again, I don't get mad about it because I blame their parents. Because if you don't have a vision, if you don't have a vision for your kids, and you're not a dictator until they get a certain age, the way things are today, they ain't gonna wind up doing much. You know what I mean? I'm a dictator, so it never interfered with my vision for mine. So they straight.
Yeah.
So I you know, now my nieces and nephews, I don't have no influence over, but maybe two of them, and those two, I done gave them the lessons where they both all right. So I don't worry about them. The other ones, I have no interaction or influence over. So, you know, like I say, fuck them. Let them do what they do. But the reality is this. We, as a people, in all truthfulness, and this is why I really wanted to hear Baruti today, and I really wanted to ask Baruti, where we as African people going to be at in 20 years? That's the question. That's the question I don't think that we're asking ourselves, and I don't really honestly think we're answering. Because I could look back 20 years, and I could look forward to these 20 years, and I could say, in all honesty, we ain't make the necessary progress that we should have from coming from the 80s to the 90s up to the 2000s.
That's the thing, Jay. In the 70s, coming out of the 60s, this society did not want us to be unified and working against them and competing with them. So they gave us affirmative action. They allowed us to have jobs and so forth. And so we believe that our skills and our abilities could take us as far as it goes because the society was, you know, colorblind. The society was fair and honest. People had tech. No, it was a facade. It was bullshit. It was just like Reconstruction was bullshit. And both of them, affirmative action and Reconstruction, lasted less than 10 years, about 10 years. And then it was back to business as usual. And the only one that I can really measure that is the fire department. Because the fire department is the most racist occupation that there is, has been, and continues to be, because you work and live in the firehouse. Yeah. And so.
Yeah. I mean,
so,
it's more racist than the police department.
Yeah, of course.
Or any other institution.
Because you
fights.
Live there. You live
remember
in
the fights in New York.
Yeah. Oh, man, New York is the most racist. 9/11 brought that out. 9/11 brought that out, how racist the New York City Fire Department is. But the point being is that, you know, because of affirmative action being the job in itself is public works. Taxes pay for the service. So the service should be reflective of the people who pay the taxes in for that service. So what happened that what the affirmative action happened for 10 years, serious growth, a number of American Africans, Latinos, indigenous, Native Americans and so forth, Asians, women. And of course, we all know that the biggest beneficiary of affirmative action, just like of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is Caucasian women. So, but anyway.
No question.
So our numbers began once it was, once they said it was over, began to dwindle. And so like I look at Chicago. Chicago, where the population is 40% us, now it's only about 10%. We are only 10% American Africans on the fire department in Chicago. We're only less than 10% in Milwaukee. Because Milwaukee, when I came on, they had 1,100 fire department. Now it's less than 800. Less than 800 firefighters. They downsized
so
that deeply.
So your numbers have dwindled over
yes.
the years?
Yes. Yes.
Whoa.
Yes. See, so, you know, I believe that that's why I'm saying we have a stagnant, we're stagnated in terms of population growth in this country.
Yeah, but Oshie, let me ask you this in all sincerity. If you had 1,100 at a certain period of time, what happened that it's now at 800? What really happened?
Well, downsized. The city of Milwaukee felt we didn't need all those firehouses. We didn't need all those firefighters. We didn't need to pay for all that equipment. And so they downsized.
Okay.
We're going to do more. We're going to do more with less. And that's really the case, because when it was that big, they didn't do as much. They didn't have tunnel teams. They probably had a dive team because they have a lake. They're right on the lake. So they have a dive team in those rivers. But they didn't have a tunnel team, a hazardous material team, you know, other special teams that they had that they developed because of, you know, advancement in firefighting. No. See, but yeah, man.
I mean, it just seems that, number one, I don't think we recognize what's going on. We don't have leadership that's identifying what's going on. It's all about the so-called survival of us as the people is predicated on the vote. I mean, this shit just don't make sense to me. It ain't math. The math don't math. If you think that the only way you gonna survive in the country is based on you voting for a cracker who don't give a damn about you, who's basically gonna go along with the oppressor and what he's doing, you're basically a fool. Because the reality is this. Let's say that things change next year as far as the Senate and the Congress go based on these fools' votes.
That don't mean shit.
And picking up seats and all of that.
That don't mean nothing.
Ask yourself these questions. Are they going to pass any laws to make the corrections to the damage that's been done? That's the key question you must ask yourself.
Well, you know, the thing, you know, I'm looking at what this man is doing now as opposed to even when he had the presidency 4 years ago, you know, where he's passing all of these, or not passing shit, what he's writing, all the executive things that he's doing, as opposed to having something go through Congress to be discussed, to be debated, to be looked at, analyzed, and so forth, and then voted on. All these executive orders, he's constantly signing and saying, now that's the law. What is that? That's dictatorial.
Nah, man, but you missed the point. This is the point that most people miss. And it's clearly why we're in the condition that we're in. Congress overrules and oversees any executive order, bro.
Because Congress is controlled by Republicans, the House and the Senate are controlled, even though the margin is razor thin, but yet they allow this to happen. But listen, let me catch another call before we get up out of here, Jay. Okay.
Yeah,
All right, brother. Thanks, Jay. Brother Irv, we got a couple of minutes quickly. I apologize. You got to you sooner. What's up, Irv? Okay. Mama Nabantu, how you doing? Mama Nabantu, too. Okay, well, there it is. Hello?
I'm here, but I don't know if y'all hear me.
We hear you very well. Yes, we can. Go ahead, Mama Nabantu.
Oh, good. I just wanted to check in. I have a self-care thing every Monday now. So that's why I've been missing Mondays, and I'm trying to get back.
Okay.
But, yeah, so, you know, you guys been announcing the Marcus Garvey Day and the PAF.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's coming in August. We got Black August.
August 16th. Mm-hmm. Both events on the same day.
You want to come on the program this Friday, first day of August, Black August, and talk about everything. Talk about the Pan African Fellas movie. What's happening with that? Talking about Garvey Day. Talking about that. You want to do that?
Yeah, I can do that.
All right, come on. This Friday, 11 a.m. Well, you can come a little later because you know how the program go.
Okay.
I look forward to Mama Nabantu. All right, dear. Peace.
All right, thank you. Peace.
Okay. Brother Irv, did you get back to the microphone? Did you get back to the phone, brother? Are you still there? All right. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they shown a hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Stay cool. Stay safe. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a blessed day. Be safe. Peace.
AOC.